I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. 577. That's the latest number released by the Pentagon. It's the official count of American soldiers killed in Iraq since the start of that war a little over a year ago. It is a number often quoted by politicians, journalists, and others as a way to measure the sacrifice, the success, or the failure of America's policy in Iraq. There is no corresponding official number of Iraqi soldiers or civilians killed in that war. The Pentagon says it doesn't try to keep track of those numbers, so it's left up to human rights groups and others to do that. Estimates of the number of Iraqi civilians killed ranges from 3,000 to 10,000. Iraqi soldiers killed? No one knows. 10,000? 20? 30,000? Some insist that the number's not important, that it can be twisted into ways to measure the morality of war. Others say it is vital to know how many people died, particularly civilians, because it's a way of bearing witness to their sacrifice. So what do you think? Do you think that the number of Iraqis killed should be kept up to date and published alongside the number of Americans killed in Iraq? Or do you agree that it's not up to the U.S. to keep a record of Iraqi casualties, civilian or military? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Starting us off today, two guests from Baghdad. Marla Razika is the founder of CIVIC. That's a name that stands for the Campaign for Innocent Victims in Conflict. And she's been traveling through Iraq since last year, researching civilian casualties. She's joining us on a line from there. And also on the line from Baghdad is Brigadier General Mark Hertling, Deputy Commander of the 1st Armored Division of the U.S. Army. Thank you both for being with me and I'll ask Brigadier General Mark Hertling perhaps to start us off here. What is the actual policy on keeping tallies of Iraqis who have been or are killed in combat or in Iraq today?
Well, I'm not really sure there is an actual policy. We certainly try and monitor the situation within Baghdad, and that's what I'll talk about today because that is our area of operation. We have seen an increasing number of Iraqis both killed and wounded because of the ongoing insurgency here, most of them, a great majority of them killed by the randomness of some of the violence caused by the insurgent groups.
So when there are bombs at police stations or bombs at the mosque that are killing Iraqis, is that a part of the number that you're trying to keep track of, General Hertling?
Well, we certainly try and monitor that, but it's really the responsibility, and if you cite the example of the police station, the Minister of the Interior is certainly concerned about the number of policemen who are either killed or wounded. It's very difficult to keep up with that number, though, given that many of the wounded or killed are taken away quickly to local civilian hospitals. Sometimes we aren't able to really actually judge the number on the ground as they are whisked away to be cared for by the local citizens. We certainly have some military forces that are on the scene at times and contribute to the medical care, but it's extremely difficult to get a good count, and I'm not sure why that count would be all that significant anyway in a crisis situation like that.
So the numbers that you would keep more direct track of would include, for example, Iraqi civilians who might be killed as part of a U.S. raid or at a checkpoint or in some specific incident of conflict?
Well, we certainly do. I mean, we monitor the number of what we would believe to be enemies and the insurgents. And we keep that as part of our records, as part of our ongoing operational records. But we also, whenever there's what we would believe to be an innocent victim of an engagement killed, we do investigations every time an innocent Iraqi happens to be in the crossfire between insurgents and coalition forces.
Let me turn to Marla Razika here. Marla, the distinction that I'm hearing from General Hertling is the importance of identifying the innocent victims of a conflict situation versus the Iraqis who are caught up in the insurgency. And I'm wondering, in your own work of trying to keep track of the number of Iraqi civilians killed, you make that distinction as well.
Well, of course we do. But what frustrates me is that I hear that it's difficult for the military to keep a track and to keep a number of, one, how many Iraqis have been killed in the terrorism or because of insurgents or during the war itself. And also the post-May 1st violence is what we're talking about, innocent Iraqis who get caught up in that violence. The problem is the perception that Iraqis have. They don't feel that the U.S. military is doing enough to protect them, and they feel that these instances are not investigated, unfortunately. We're hearing that they are, but it's really what the Iraqis themselves believe.
And Marla, tell us just a little bit about the work that you're doing with CIVIC. You are keeping track of all civilian deaths since the beginning of the war, is that right?
Well, we did a door-to-door survey with 160 surveyors across Iraq a couple of days after the fall of the regime. And our goal was to not get a complete number, but was to interview dependents, see how people suffered losses, and see what they need so that we could respond with appropriate humanitarian assistance. We worked with Senator Leahy's office from Vermont to get money allocated through USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, to assist families that were caught up in the military violence. So we did a very thorough survey. However, we didn't count every body. We didn't simply just go to hospitals and use their records, because our goal is not so much really about a number, but it's about the families and the people that are harmed and giving them what they need so they can get on with their lives. And we talk about a new Iraq, an Iraq that was ruled for so many years by a ruthless leader who showed no care and no regard for civilian life. So we want to make sure that we show Iraqis that Americans do care about their well-being. And that's the aim of our keeping records. We don't keep records to say, this is the number. We keep the records to find the people who are suffering and find out what they need. And also, we do our own investigations because families want to know what happened. They want to know why their father was driving by a military checkpoint and he got shot. Well, it's very important that they have the information and that type of closure.
So do you work with the U.S. military there, Marla?
I do. I work with the military. I work with judge advocate generals, the military lawyers. I attend the military press briefings all the time. I got here April 10th, and I worked with the military to locate sites where cluster bombs were used or other unexploded ordnances. And I have a very open relationship with the military because they're the ones that are going to do the investigation. And also, the military has provided some cash assistance to some families that have suffered losses in the forms of sympathy payments. So we advocate for families, and that means we work with the military to make sure the families get what they need.
Does that mean, though, Marla, that the number of Iraqi civilians who may have died in the last years is not a number that you're interested in?
Oh, I'm definitely interested in it as a number. And we're working with the Ministry of Interior right now to get the numbers of cases that look of Iraqi civilians who've been harmed, one, because of terrorism, two, also police officers who've been killed, and three, who've been caught up at the wrong time between coalition forces and the enemy, or maybe coalition forces were acting too jumpy and accidentally shot the wrong people. So we're very concerned about that, but we believe that the best place to get that information is from the Minister of Interior, because they work with all the police stations in the country, and they give us cases and information on things that look strange, and we go out and we investigate it. But we were focused on the casualties of the war, so we unfortunately did not do the same post-May 1st survey, but we do get lots of information from the Ministry of Interior, from different police stations, etc. But at this moment, I couldn't give you a number. But I don't think it's difficult at all for the U.S. military to compile this number. When they have forces all across the country trying to find the bad guys, the insurgents, when they have forces in Afghanistan trying to find Osama bin Laden, it's not really that hard to go back to hospital records, to go back to the Ministry of Interior, or just to go to the spot reports that they themselves file.
Just stop you there, because I'd like to hear General Hertling's answer to that. General Hertling, she's saying that you guys are pretty well the only ones who could get this number pulled together.
Well, Well, obviously, I would disagree with Mr. Zika on that. We have worked very closely with her on many occasions. I know our staff judge advocate has a very good relationship with her. But at the same time, there are a lot of activities going on through the city of Baghdad. And again, I'll focus my comments on just the city because that's where we are and are responsible for, that are not only caused death and injury due to the insurgent activities, but also are the result of criminal activity. I mean, this is a city of 5.5 million people. There are criminal actions taking place all over the city, and in a city that is really at the beginning of its growth back into the 20th century after 35 years of Hussein's rule, it's even difficult to understand what is an action that was caused by insurgency versus an action that's just caused by a street crime. So I would take a great deal of issue with Marla's comment that we are the only ones capable of doing that. First of all, it's not in our charter to check hospitals and morgues and things like that. We're very focused on providing security. That's the other issue that I would take with Ms. Ruzicka, saying that we have done nothing to provide for security. That's just a ludicrous comment, given the fact that we are training the Iraqi police, almost 11,000 of them on the streets of Baghdad now. We have trained a new Iraqi Civil Defense Corps, all over 6,000 of those on the streets of Baghdad, to try and provide the security for the Iraqi people that they so richly deserve in a growing metropolis like this. So I would take issue with both those comments that we aren't providing for security. We are, in fact, providing a great deal of security with our Iraqi partners, and it would be extremely challenging to accomplish our mission of conducting a counterinsurgency operation in a very complex insurgency against both former regimists, inside terrorist and foreign terrorists.
General Hertling, let me just stop you there if I can for a minute, because I want to make sure that I have some time here for Marla Ruzicka to speak again. Marla?
I don't think that I ever made a comment saying that the U.S. military isn't providing for security, so I don't understand where that came from. But what I do believe is I think if the U.S. military in April did what we did, got some Iraqis together, and really looked at the crime patterns that were happening, many people in the beginning were fearing that there would be reprisal killings, that there would be all sorts of violence. So you have to investigate, well, if it's criminal or if it's military, if it's insurgents, you have to understand the trends in violence so you can prevent them from happening.
Marla,
so that should have really started at the very beginning.
Let me interrupt you here. Are you saying that this is important for Iraqis to know this, or it's also important for Americans to know this?
It's important for everyone to know this all over the world. Look, the U.S. military goes to great lengths to protect innocent lives. Well, then please, we want them to show the world that. And plus, when we talk about a ruthless regime that was replaced here, who didn't care about human life, we want to show that the Americans do care about Iraqi civilians. And that's why it's very important. It's not just about a number, because each number is a family, is a case, is a need, is a tragedy.
Marla, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today.
And I want to thank Mark Hertling as well, and thank a lot of the troops who have helped us with some of our cases.
And just a note to our listeners, the organization Civic has a website. There'll be a link to it on our website if you're interested in finding out more about the work of Marla Ruzicka and her volunteers. Brigadier General Mark Hertling is going to stay with us a little bit longer. Chance for me to say that our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, and I'm interested in hearing from you whether or not you think it's also important for Americans and people right around the world to have a closer tally on what's happening with Iraqi civilian casualties in that country. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Do you think that the number of Iraqis killed should be kept up to date, published alongside the number of Americans dying in Iraq? Or do you think that really it's not up to the United States military in particular to keep that sort of tally? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We invite you to join us. Brigadier General Mark Hertling, Deputy Commander of the 1st Armored Division of the U.S. Army, is on the line with us from Baghdad. And we're joined now from the MSNBC studios in New Jersey by William Arkin. He's a columnist for the Los Angeles Times, military analyst for NBC, and a former Army intelligence officer himself who until last year, and Bill, correct me if I get this wrong, you were working with Human Rights Watch counting war casualties in conflict areas. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you don't do that anymore. Is that just because you got a better job or you decided that you weren't that interested in it?
Well, I still continue to cover the issue of protecting civilian life and minimizing civilian harm in conflict. But to rise above the ground level in Baghdad, where you saw a little bit of the frustrations involved in actually keeping statistics on this matter, mm-hmm. I also came to the conclusion that it was much more important to try to understand why civilians die and to understand sort of the nexus between the efforts of the American military to minimize civilian harm and the operations of the American military. The problem here, to me, is not whether a count is required. The problem is that we are looking for a count as a way of trying to figure out whether we're doing well or not doing well. And it's symptomatic of the fact that civilian casualties are a huge issue, and yet we don't address it very well.
So if the search for a count is a way of measuring the success or failure or morality of war, why is that such a bad thing?
I don't think it's a bad thing. I just know from my own experience of being on the ground in Iraq after Operation Desert Storm, in Yugoslavia, yeah. in Lebanon, in Afghanistan, that it's incredibly difficult to do. And so I have sympathy for both Marla's efforts to seek compensation and help for the victims of war and for the general's efforts to maintain security and keep to his mission of conducting an ongoing operation. Both of them are right. But what's missing in here is any kind of a formal, large look, lessons learned about what we should know for future conflicts and for keeping the peace of understanding how civilian casualties and civilian harm fits into that picture. I think the military doesn't do a very good job of evaluating the lessons learned at the large scale. I think that the military doesn't do a very good job of conveying the results of its investigations. And I think also at the same time, those in the human rights community expect way too much in terms of the ease with which one can count these casualties and also the responsibility of the military institution to do so.
Help me with a bit of history, though, Bill, because it seems to me when we look back at Vietnam and the Second World War, the Korean War, the question of keeping those kinds of tallies, well, that was something that the U.S. military did do, that it was something, a way of keeping up morale by saying, look, we've killed this number of enemy soldiers. I'm not talking so much here about the civilian casualties, although those numbers are certainly available from the wars. But has there been a change?
Well, the first thing I would say is there's still enormous disagreements from World War II as to how many civilians died as a result of various military engagements. There is a rich academic literature about how many Japanese died in the various firebombings in the cities in Japan. That is emblematic of the fact of how difficult this is. But I think that the very word body count came out of the Vietnam aesthetic. And in the Vietnam War, the number of civilians killed, the number of enemy combatants killed, was used as a measure of success on the ground. And it became so corrosive and so corrupt as a measure that commanders who experienced the use of the body count in Vietnam, they really decided after that war, it was a part of their gut, that they were never going to get involved in the body count business again. And when General Schwarzkopf was the commander of U.S. forces during Desert Storm, he made it very clear that the United States was not going to get in the body count business. And ever since that day, this has been the mantra of the American military. Unfortunately, what has been thrown out with the baby is the bathwater that has to do with learning the lessons of civilian casualties and understanding the complexity of it, so that the American military can learn from its mistakes and we can learn from the experiences to further reduce civilian harm in warfare. So I am sympathetic to the American military view that they don't do body counts. But on the other hand, I am also worried that we're not learning enough from our experiences and that the rest of the world, as Marla said, is not necessarily seeing an accurate picture of the American military efforts to reduce civilian harm.
Let me hear from General Hertling here, because General Hertling, if I'm not mistaken, you inherited as an American soldier this corrosive notion about how body counts can actually work against morale of soldiers in Vietnam when you began in Germany. Is that accurate?
That's very accurate. First of all, I want to say I agree with many of the points Bill's making, and I have great respect for both his comments and also the ones and the work done by Marla. The interesting thing about body count, when you apply it to the enemy, there's both a pragmatic and a philosophical disconnect when using it. First of all, pragmatically, it in this kind of an environment, in an insurgency, it doesn't matter how many enemy you kill, just like was the case in Vietnam, if there is still a will by the enemy to continue to fight. So we've seen within Baghdad the disruption of the U.S. forces have disrupted what we believe to be the 14 terrorist cells or in former regime cells within Baghdad, but there is still a will by some, albeit a few, to continue the fight against coalition forces. At the same time, there's a philosophic problem that if you have an enemy whose ideology is such that he will continue to fight, as we're beginning to see with the new foreign fighters that are coming in and some of the internal insurgents that are fighting it for extreme ideology, it's difficult to, if you kill all of them but one, and that one continues to execute car bombs against high-value targets, then you haven't done much to stop the insurgency and improve the security of Baghdad.
If I can, bring a caller into the program. It's been a while since we've given them a chance. So let's start with Marianne. Marianne's on the line from Louisville, Kentucky. Marianne, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to add that I really don't find it credible that they're not keeping track of body counts. They may not want to publish that, but they have always kept track of casualties, and I just find it not credible that they're not doing it.
General Hertling?
Well, I would like to say that you're absolutely right. We are keeping track of every single civilian or enemy that is killed, but quite frankly, in this environment, especially with some of the religious mores where part of the Islamic faith is to bury the individual, any individual on the same day they die, there are sometimes occasions where the friends of the fighters or the friends of innocents will take their bodies away very rapidly to have them buried. So please believe me when I say that we try and keep an accurate count, but frankly, sometimes it's just impossible to keep that. And going back to what Marla was saying to continue this, it's very difficult sometimes to even have an understanding by the families of what occurred with their loved ones. Again, was it a matter of they were killed by kidnappers? Were they killed by insurgents? Were they killed by coalition forces? And many of the people of Baghdad, because of 35 years of falsehoods by the former regime, want to believe that all evil is caused by the liberating force. So we've run into many things in this complex insurgency that don't have easy solutions in terms of counts or analysis or statistics.
Mark, I want to thank you once again for being with us on the program.
Thank you very much.
Brigadier General Mark Hertling is Deputy Commander of the 1st Armored Division of the U.S. Army. He was joining us on the line from Baghdad. Marianne, are you still there? No, Marianne has gone. You know, it's probably a good time to bring in Carl Canetta. Carl is Project Director of the Project on Defense Alternatives at the Commonwealth Institute and author of a report called Wages of War, which does make some estimates of the number of civilian and military casualties. And he's been listening in patiently. He's joining us from the NPR studios in Washington, D.C. Carl, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Tell me, based on what you've been listening to, why it is that you think it is important to try and pull those numbers together.
Well, there's a couple of reasons. I mean, we could say that there is a moral equation that people are interested in, often a reference in our debates about the war to just war theory, which holds that proportionality is one of the principles for judging the morality of a war. And proportionality implies that you need some sense of what the of how many people are dying.
Can you explain more in simpler terms what you mean by proportionality, Carl?
Well, that the objective that is being pursued is worth the cost, the okay. human cost being among the types of costs, and that that figures in part in how people judge the value of a war. There's also a strategic equation. We can look at casualties in war as one cost among others. It's interesting that we don't have as much controversy around the financial cost of wars, which in this case will exceed $150 billion. But we're certainly interested in that number, and it is part of our thinking about war, if wars are worth it and what their long-term consequences might be.
How close, though, Carl, are you getting to numbers that are you know, specific? What have you got?
Well, you know, what we did in our report is we monitored, screened, and then tried to reconcile a variety of sources, mostly Western journalist sources, including several surveys of hospitals, with reports from NGOs like Civic, and then judge those in the context of operational data from Central Command. Where did activity occur? Were the reports plausible? With that approach, our conclusion was that something in the neighborhood of 3,200 to 4,300 non-combatants were killed during the main phase of the war, which is what we looked at most closely. In terms of combatants, we estimated somewhere between 7,500 and 10,500. Those are mostly drawn from reports by embedded reporters, including dozens and dozens of estimates made by commanders, field commanders at various levels. So the estimates are certainly out there, and in fact, even Secretary Rumsfeld, back in the Afghan war, and I believe in an interview with PBS NewsHour, said that he was seeing reports come across his desk several times a day. You know, 20 here, 40 there, 12 here, 6
right.
there.
But just big keep gaps here, Carl. I mean, I'm looking at one number from your report that estimates not just military deaths, somewhere between 21 and 55,000 between the beginning of the war and the end of October. I mean,
not from our report. Not 21 to 55,000.
Oh, okay, no. I'm mistaken then.
No. There are a number of estimates out there, and I think when you make a judgment about this, you need to look at people's methodology. You need to, in a sense, kick the tires and not just accept any number at face value. Yes, we always deal with ranges, and I don't think that anyone who produces a precise number it cannot be a serious estimate.
Right.
The question here is, can we be usefully accurate? And I believe that the ranges that are possible are usefully accurate. They give us a window on the likely impact of the war.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our next call from Boston, Massachusetts, and Benjamin's with us. Benjamin. Hi.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. This shows a total disrespect and disregard for other people's lives. We went to war for the sake of 3,000 American souls. And now that reports are coming showing that this war is probably based on false assumptions, you wonder why they hate us. And again, if you don't give that number, somebody like news media like Al Jazeera will give it. And when they give it, please do not argue about it. It is moral imperative that we must at least try to get an estimate of Iraqi lives, especially innocent Iraqi lives that are killed in this war.
Let me, if I can, bring Bill Arkin back in on this one, Bill, because you were talking a little bit earlier about the way that the military will use these kind of numbers in you know, improving the way that it will wage a war. But what we seem to hear more and more is the way that civilians want to hear a number as a way of judging that war. And that's what you're trying to resist that in a way?
Well, I think that all we've heard today is a clear requirement from the military, from the human rights community, from the activist community, for some sense of what Carl calls proportionality, for some sense of the cost of the war. And I think that that is required. I'm not sure that it comes through an academic body count, and I'm not sure that it comes through a door-to-door survey. But I think that what's really missing is some kind of a consensus as to the cost in relationship to the conduct of the military. And I think that what's also missing is a sense of the cost in relationship to inaction. Iraqis were dying before this war. They were dying as a result of the deprivations that came from sanctions. They were dying as a result of the brutality of the regime of Saddam Hussein. And so to say that the United States is responsible or the coalition is responsible for casualties and to not factor in other things that would have been happening had the United States not gone to war against Iraq is irresponsible. That's basic demographics.
Okay, but the point that Benjamin is making, though, is that as more and more questions are asked about the motivation for the war, more and more people are interested in not only the number of Americans who are killed as a way of evaluating the usefulness of the war, but the Iraqis as well. So it's not just measuring it by the number of those killed, but also against whether or not it was done for the right reasons in the first place.
Well, look, I find it very difficult to take seriously those who oppose the war or who were boosters for the war, who use civilian casualties as a way of covertly arguing their point. Those who are using civilian casualties to be anti-military, or those who are using somehow the benefits of American military action to be pro-military and pro-intervention, are both doing the same thing. So, of course, it is the case that we are arguing about civilian casualties today because there are questions about whether or not the United States should have used force. But those are two very separate questions. In fact, in international law, they're separated. The justification for going to war and the conduct in warfare are two different streams of thought. And so I don't think you can confuse them. If we had gone to war with Iraq unjustly and we had done so on false pretense in violation of international law and no one died, it's still a violation of international law. And the converse is also the case.
I need to stop you there. We're taking a very short break. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, do you, as Bill Arkin suggests, separate the reasons for going to war, the conduct of that war? How do you make sense of the casualty figures on both sides? Do you think that they are being handled properly or mishandled by people with other agendas? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio, and we're talking about the fact that at this hour, and for most of the past year, we've kept a very close tally of the number of American soldiers killed in the conflict in Iraq. However, the number of Iraqi soldiers and civilians killed has been a much mushier figure. Does that matter? Should those numbers be kept more close? Or is that an inaccurate way of measuring the morality of war? Please join us. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Bill Arkin is with us. He's a senior fellow at the School of Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins University, a former Army intelligence officer, currently working as a columnist for the LA Times and military analyst for NBC. And Carl Canetta is also with us. He's project director for the Project on Defense Alternatives at the Commonwealth Institute. And it's some of the figures from the civilian casualties that they've pulled together in their own study that we're talking about today. Carl, the point that that Bill was making a couple of minutes ago about, you know, you really can't say these people died as a result of the war without taking into account the fact that many of those people might well have died under the continuing tyranny of Saddam Hussein. How do you square that when you're pulling together the kind of figures you are?
Well, I think that Bill is right that the numbers that we produce are just an input into making that type of determination. The numbers themselves do not say that the war is good or bad. So yes, you have to look at the question in terms of a balance. There are other questions as well. What is the long-term impact of these types of casualties to American influence in the region, to the opinion of people in the region toward the United States? What does it mean in terms of the type of circumstances that our troops face every day in Iraq? These are all reasons why you need that number. Part of the reason that it is so controversial and there's such resistance to pursuing that is that actually there's a background assumption that we have reached a point in warfare that we can wage a war with very, very, very few casualties. That's never tacked down to a number. But that's a background assumption. And just about any way you look at these numbers, you've got to say, well, at the very least, we really haven't crossed that threshold yet. We are still talking about thousands and not hundreds of killed. And it's important to set aside that assumption. Still doesn't mean that the war was immoral. It's just a necessary input.
Bill?
Well, first of all, I think in a historical sweep, I guess I would reluctantly have to conclude that we have crossed that, in the sense that if you think of hundreds of thousands of civilians being killed in World War II or in the Korean War, then in terms of not just in terms of military action now, then we went to Operation Desert Storm, really the first war of the modern precision era. And in that war, probably somewhere on the order of 32 to 3,500 civilians died. And in Yugoslavia, an air power only war in 1999, about 500 civilians died. And so I think we can see from that that there are trends in warfare that clearly favor the protection of civilians. Now, what happened in Operation Iraqi Freedom? That was a departure from the earlier precision air wars of Desert Storm and Operation Allied Force. What happened was the U.S. military on the ground, armies and Marines, went into Iraq through areas where civilians lived and actually conquered the capital, a city of 5 million. And as a result of that, there was a significant increase in the number of civilian casualties in comparison with Yugoslavia, in comparison with how many civilians died during Operation Desert Storm. But if you compare it bomb for bomb, if you compare it man for man fighting against each other, even Operation Desert Storm looks extremely clean in comparison. Now, why is that the case? Well, a lot of Operation Desert Storm, that is the Gulf War in 1991, the Iraqi army deployed itself to the desert of Kuwait and southern Iraq, and so they weren't near civilians. And so as the United States and the coalition bombed them then, they didn't kill a lot of civilians as a result of that bombing, whereas the Iraqi military deployed itself in and around cities in southern Iraq in this war. And as a result, even the legitimate attacks upon those military forces had a lot of what the military calls collateral damage, the
Bill,
effects on civilians.
Let me stop you there. I want to get back to our callers. We're going to Framingham, Massachusetts next. And Michelle's joining us. Michelle, thanks for calling.
Oh, you're very welcome. I just have a comment. It seems that we have to know how many civilians are being killed when we're waging this type of wars, especially when we're talking about the United States of America. People in this country do not know what war is. They have not lived through one. I mean, I believe that your last one was the American Civil War, if I remember correctly my history. And, you know, you had September the 11th, but that wasn't really a war. And so we need to make this concept of war a much more humane, that's a funny word to use, but put it back on the human scale. And we need to know how many children were killed, how many women were killed.
But, Michelle, there were hundreds of thousands of American soldiers killed in the First World War and in the in the Second World War. And, and you know, 47,000 Americans killed in Vietnam. I'm not sure that you can make the case that Americans don't know war, can you?
What I'm trying to say is that they do not know war because they do not have it on their own soil.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference. I come from Europe, and I can tell you, even though I did not live through the wars, I came shortly afterward, and I can tell you that seeing bombed out schools and hospitals and houses, hearing my parents talk about the bombs falling around them, seeing the you know, everywhere, the signs of it, and hearing about it and more or less living it. Even though I did come after the war, I was still in it, you know?
Let me turn to Carl Canetti.
Yeah.
Michelle, let me turn, if I can, to Carl Canetti, because I'm just interested in knowing, Carl, when you're doing these studies, and you've done them, you know, in Afghanistan and in Iraq, is a part of that to say to people in a country like the United States, though you may not be witnessing this on your doorstep, these are the consequences of the wars?
Well, I think, yes, to bring out the cost and to be clear about that cost. And I think it does. One thing it says to the world is that clearly we care. There are other ways of saying that, but it is a number, and our interest in that number is a way of indicating that that we are not ignoring this particular cost. Resistance to make the attempt, conversely, can make it seem as though we are not seriously considering it. So there's sort of a confidence and building measure to, and it communicates I think a positive thing to the world. The seriousness with which we take this particular cost. Certainly, we should be as serious about it as the financial costs of the war, which we take very seriously.
How much of this, Bill, do you suppose is a result of the American Army making a decision that it doesn't need to pull together either opposition military casualties? Well, let's just stick with that one, because unlike Vietnam, unlike the world wars, there's not really much question about who is going to win this. It's not required as a morale booster. Nobody needs to be told, don't worry, we killed 300 people when we took that hill. We're doing well. Is a lot of this tied up with the fact that America's military supremacy is virtually unchallenged now?
Well, I guess to some degree that's true. I think that this is a very slippery slope, and the military recognizes the dangers of keeping numbers, because once you begin that process, it can become all-consuming. It can become something which dominates a sense of whether or not a conflict was just and whether or not it was properly run.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm interested in that specific point that you're making, because doesn't that mean then that the U.S. military in some future war will say, hey, look at, you know, we only killed 12 civilians when we went into North Korea. Doesn't that make us wonderful? And therefore they're using those figures in a very political way. They're choosing not to do it in a place like Iraq because politically they're not particularly flattering.
Well, I guess I would have to say, if that's a concern of yours, that the American military then needs to be applauded because it has not used the low number of civilian casualties in Yugoslavia or in Iraq in 1991 to justify going to war. In fact, it's avoided that argument. So in some way, I guess I would say that would be a good thing. You know, the problem here is that civilian casualties can play both ways. An earlier caller said that, Americans have never had a war on their soil and therefore don't appreciate it. Well, I can think of examples, say, for instance, in the cases of Japan and Germany, where total destructions of those societies in World War II have led to the creation of very peaceful, pacific societies, probably two of the most pacific and most anti-military societies on our planet are Germany and Japan. Yet at the same time, in places where violence and warfare is a standard part of the way of life, in places like Afghanistan and the Middle East and Chechnya and other places, my experience on the ground is that people are very much bloodthirsty and see conflict as the way to resolve matters. And so it hasn't had the impact of somehow making them more peaceful.
Right, and very much using that numbers game as a way of saying those guys are worse than we are, therefore we get to fight back. It's a point that I hadn't thought of. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Let's take a next call from Louisville, Kentucky, and Marianne's joining us. Hi, Marianne.
Hello. Our newspaper, the Courier-Journal, does carry a box with our losses, our military losses and casualties, and I appreciate that. But for many weeks, I've longed for a little box like that about deaths and injuries of military and civilians in Iraq. I think on human grounds, we want to be aware of that. number increasing. The only place I've ever read that figure is in Christian Century magazine that said there were 20,000 injuries and 10,000 deaths. This was maybe a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
We do have figures like that, the larger figure of Palestinians killed and the smaller figure of Israelis killed. How come they get to have both figures and we don't get to have both figures?
Why is it important, Marianne? Why do you want to see that other figure?
A caller before me used the word humane. I use the word human. We've got to think of the whole world and the value of other people's lives as being equal to the value of our lives.
Carl Canetta, I suspect part of what your work is addressing that concern specifically.
Well, yes. I mean, and we're also interested in the strategic impact. What type of repercussions are you likely to expect? The caller mentioned the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. And here we have numbers of dead that are well below what has been experienced in the Iraq War. And in fact, if you look back at a number of the Arab-Israeli wars, going all the way back to 1967-56, the numbers of military and civilian killed are often considerably lower than what we've seen in Iraq. Nonetheless, those numbers have had a tremendous impact in the region, and they have been the source of a cycle of violence. So in that sense, we're still dealing with wars that have an impact that should really concern us.
We're a little tight for time here. I want
sure.
to make sure that I get a final comment from Bill Arkin, because, Bill, Marianne has me thinking back to the comment that somebody made earlier that if there is not some kind of official estimate, then everybody gets to make up their own, and that could, in fact, end up being more damaging in the long run, no?
Well, I think that the numbers are a slippery slope, as I said, and it can be more damaging. Look, we do need to have a sense of the human cost of war. I am totally sympathetic to the caller's point. But if we are so concerned about the sanctity of human life, we have to equally be concerned about whether Iraqi civilians, as an example, are dying under the regime of Saddam Hussein. And those Americans who opposed the use of force last year and yet at the same time are now saying that they're so concerned about the plight of the Iraqi civilian population, I have to ask them to look into their hearts and ask themselves, are they really just anti-military or are they pro-Iraqi civilian?
Bill, I want to thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you very much.
Bill Arkin is columnist for the Los Angeles Times, military analyst for NBC. And Carl Canetta, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Carl's with the Project on Defense Alternatives, author of Wages of War. There'll be a link on our website at www.theconnection.org to that study if you want to take a look at what they've put together. Earlier on the program, we talked with General Mark Hertling and Marla Rizika. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.